Bufflin to the loose puck. Bufflin will control. Bufflin will try to protect himself there. Came off a check and got it into the slot. A shot, they score! Kyle Connor made a shifty little move. All that work by Bufflin. Got some separation in the slot and beat Bernier with a wrist shot. It's 2-0 Winnipeg.
Kyle Connor with the game-winning goal last night for the Winnipeg Jets. It was the second of six goals as the Jets pounded the Colorado Avalanche by a 6-1 margin last night at Bell MTS Place. A dominant performance by your hometown Winnipeg Jets. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live via the iHeartRadio app and at tsn1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Tons on the Winnipeg Jets. Look around the NHL as well, and of course, get you up to date on everything to do with the trade deadline, which is now only 9 days away, rapidly approaching the NHL trade deadline. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by the man on my immediate left, Ezra Ginsberg. We call him Big Daddy. And the man on my far left, a man who actually has sold his house because he's just living permanently now at Bell MTS Place, Dave Minuk. What is this, Dave? Was that night four in a row or three in a row?
Four in a row.
Four in a row last night at Bell MTS Plays with another five to come?
Not necessarily nights, but yes. There was an afternoon game on Monday.
Monday afternoon with it being the Louis Riel Day holiday and everything, yes.
This is like the homestand that will never end.
It is.
And well, it doesn't help when the Jets have a 10-game homestand, then the Moose come home after a 9-game road trip to start an 8-game homestand. So you've got a lot of home.
We got a lot of home, and Dave is obviously selling his home to move in permanently. Yes. It's nice that they set you up with a little cot there.
Yeah,
in the back, you know, right by the Zamboni there. That was sweet of them.
Yeah, no, it's nice. They gave me a little bed sheet, and I'm very comfortable there. It's
unlimited popcorn.
Oh yeah, they kind of throw the popcorn down, and I
you're like an elephant in a cage.
Yeah.
This is sort of what it works out to be. Anyways, we get started with last night's Jets Avalanche game. Of course, you know it was a close game. After 20 minutes, and then the Jets absolutely...
It shouldn't have been.
Well, it shouldn't have been. That's fine. A fair point, Ezzy, there. The Jets were the better of the two teams, really, from start to finish last night. There was no question about that. As they should be, as the Avalanche are without their best player in their lineup, that being Nathan MacKinnon, who's shortly to return to their lineup. But I would suggest that it was probably the Andrew Kopp goal, the one that was shorthanded that made it 3-0 for the Jets, you know, with about 5 minutes to go in the second period, that really just opened up the floodgates. Because from then on out, even though the Jets had that 2-0 lead, they were getting into some penalty trouble. They took a number of penalties in a row in that second period, and they've had the Avalanche been able to capitalize, it would have been a one-goal game. They couldn't. The Jets score shorthanded instead. 3-0, and then... You know, all bets are off at that point in time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. That Andrew Kopp goal for me was the big one. And, you know, I was wondering to myself, you know, before the game started and we found out who the starting goalie was going to be for the Avalanche, why Semyon Varlamov wasn't in net. He comes off of a shutout against the Montreal Canadiens. I think he had 44 saves against the Montreal Canadiens. I think Dave, too, was expecting Semyon Varlamov to be in net for the Avalanche. And let's be honest, I mean, Bernier was not sharp last night.
No.
And, you know, Blake Wheeler, you know, let's be honest, he banks it off of him, and it's the old you know, trick shot off of the back of Jonathan Bernier, who's kind of, you know, going backwards into his own net. He was out of position there. But, I mean, aside from that goal, I mean, the Jets were all over the Avalanche. You know, I mentioned it shouldn't have been 1-0. I thought it easily could have been, you know, 3-0 after the first period. And the Jets were just all over the Avalanche for the entire game. And for me, Drew, a big, you know, turning point, if you want to call it that, or a big part of that game is... During the second period, when the Jets were taking all of those penalties, Mark Scheifele took a penalty, Tyler Myers took a penalty, I know there was another penalty in there, the Jets took three consecutive penalties, and they killed them all off.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before. I mean, the Jets' home penalty kill has been really good this year. I believe it's still top 10 in the league now, and that's been a problem for the Jets over the last few years. So even when they got into penalty trouble, they were able to kill those penalties off. And let's be honest here, Colorado's power play isn't one that's going to strike fear into the rest of the NHL, but you've still got talented players out there, guys like Gabe Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, I thought Eric Johnson actually, in a 6-1 loss, was by far the Avalanche's best defenseman. You could see his frustration at the end of the game there.
Yeah.
So, and he was obviously the hero back in early January for the Avalanche. But, I mean, the Jets are just a better team, in my opinion, than the Avalanche. And they showed it last night.
Yeah, we talked about it on Wednesday's show, Ezzy, on NHL This Week. We said that, you know, the Avalanche cannot be without their best players because they just don't have the depth.
I don't even think, Drew, if Nathan MacKinnon was
probably
in the lineup,
not.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Probably not. The Jets were that much better than the Avalanche were last night. But you just get to see it that, you know, a team like the Avalanche, who've had a good season, better season than people would have expected, just can't afford to be without their best player. They don't have the depth that the Jets have when the Jets were without Scheifele. And that's why you see it in the course of the game when Andrew Kopp scores to make it 3-0, you know, when Kyle Connor scores to make it 2-0, the Jets just take control of the game. They had control from start to finish, and that's why, you know, all we're talking about today is Dustin Byfuglien singing in the penalty box for the, you know, for 15 or 17 minutes in the third period there.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was highly entertaining, and, you know, he's sweet. He was dancing and singing and clapping along to Sweet Caroline, to Stompin' Tom.
Yeah, thank God I'm a country boy.
Yeah, he was doing it all. I mean, he was quite entertaining, and let me tell you, the crowd loved it. They gave him a huge standing O when he got out of the penalty box with about 2:45 left in that third period. But, you know, it's interesting. The Avalanche are a tale of two teams, though, because they're very good at the Pepsi Center in Denver, and they are not a good road team. I think they're 9-15-3 or something like that away from Colorado. So they just haven't been a good road team. And again, when you remove their best player, it's going to have a big impact on the team. But, you know, I thought, as he touched on earlier, I thought that first period score was kind to them. I thought it very easily could have been a 2 or 3-0 game at that point. And even the shots were 10-8, I believe, for Winnipeg. But they started off about 5 or 6-1 for Colorado. And it was interesting because it didn't seem like Colorado had any flow. So you were shocked that they had that many shots.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they did. And then all of a sudden it was all Jets. And the Jets really controlled the puck. So it was the score, I thought, was kind. And then, you know, we saw the Jets open up 3 goals in that middle frame and really take control of the game. Patrick Laine's, you know, just they haven't even finished announcing the penalty before his shot's already off. The puck's already in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And I didn't think Bernier was particularly good, but I didn't think the Colorado Avalanche could keep up with the Jets. I think the Jets played with speed, which is their key, and I thought all the lines were really going well. And, I really liked Andrew Kopp's game. I mean, Ezzy and I talked about it when we were in the press box last night. Like, I thought Kopp played he's been playing really well all season. It was his 200th NHL game, manages to get a shorthanded goal, and I which was a nice reward for a guy who's, I think he had like a 27-game.
25
or something like
something
that.
Like that,
of
yeah.
Having gone without a goal. And it's a nice reward for a guy who really does a lot of good things but doesn't necessarily get rewarded on the score sheet.
Yeah, I agree, Dave. Kopp was excellent last night, and, you know, we've talked about the shorthanded goal, and, you know, he's been a solid player for Paul Maurice all year. And let's be honest, guys, we don't expect Kopp to stay between Laine and Ehlers for much longer. I mean, you expect, you know, if it's not Sunday, it's probably going to be Tuesday that, you know, you see Ehlers and Laine either move up to the second line or the first line. But,
no.
You know, Andrew Kopp, it shows you what Paul Maurice thinks of Kopp, that he puts him in that position. And, you know, for me, a bigger question mark is, when is Adam Lowry coming back? Because we thought he might come back, you know, for one of these two games here against either LA or Florida, but it looks like, you know, he might not be back for another week or two.
Well, he's not even skating. I mean, he's off ice entirely, which really gives you pause, especially with the trade deadline not 9 days away. Now, you would expect that Adam Lowry is going to be back before the season ends. Because, I mean, there's been no word that it's a significantly long-term injury. But if you're the Jets and, you know, he hasn't been on the ice and maybe you have some uncertainty in that regard, does that change your plans, of course, ahead of the trade deadline? Because, I mean, the Jets can't go into the playoffs, with all due respect, without Adam Lowry as one of their regular centermen. I don't think they can do that and expect to, you know, have a long playoff run with just Scheifele and Little up the middle.
Right, and you have options. I mean, Blake Wheeler has played center.
Sure.
I don't think you want Blake Wheeler playing center because he's so good on the right wing on that top line. But, I mean, you have the option of, for example, playing Jack Roslovic at center. You can play Matthew Perreault at center. The Jets have a lot of options. But I agree with you, Drew. I mean, Paul Maurice wants Adam Lowry penciled in as that third line center. He's that shutdown third line center. So, I mean, if he is out longer than, let's say, a month, you know, maybe that'll impact what the Jets do. But it's really too early to say, just because we don't know how serious the injury is at this point.
We really don't know what the injury is at all. I mean, it's sort of been sort of very, you know, with Shifley, you had an idea what the injury was because you could sort of pinpoint it when it happened in Edmonton. Sure, you didn't get an official diagnosis because the Jets are very tight-lipped about that. You'd know if it was a concussion because Paul Maurice tells you when it's a concussion. That's his policy about, you know, Mason and Hutchinson. He's been very vocal. Those guys have concussions. We're being very cautious about them. With Lowry, is still the uncertainty as to what specifically the ailment is. And this is a guy who has had bad health luck all season long. You know, he comes back from being out for how many games was it? 13, 14, something like that. Gets injured very quickly again, back out of the lineup. So you wonder if maybe they're being extra cautious with Adam Lowry, because they need him for April. We don't know the answer to that. One thing that I found amazing, you mentioned Andrew Kopp's goal-scoring slump that breaks out last night. Mm-hmm. I think it just shows how well Blake Wheeler has been playing, that he had gone 15 games mm-hmm. without a goal, mm-hmm. and nobody really said a word about it.
Well, because he was still doing. I mean, it wasn't like. I mean, goal scoring isn't the be all and end all.
No,
I mean,
it's not the strongest part of his game.
Yeah, he's a facilitator, anyways.
Right, but to still, I mean, if you
just had, like you, Dave, you're a facilitator.
If you had said that Blake Wheeler was going to go 15 games without a goal, you would have thought that at some point in time it would have become not a talking point, but some sort of discussion point.
Look, if the team was losing, then maybe you're having that conversation. But when the team is winning, I don't see the value in the conversation. Because what's the point? Because the fact of the matter is that if you talk to a player, they're never going to say, well, I need to get my goals, because that's the most important thing. I mean, the whole idea is these guys, if you ever have a conversation with them, are always going to talk about the team and what's best for the team. And the fact of the matter is, if you're Blake Wheeler, and Paul Maurice touched on it the other day in one of his scrums, the fact of the matter is that's what matters to you, is that how is the team doing? And that's the way Blake Wheeler would talk about it if you asked him the question about his goal scoring.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was playing center.
Yeah.
But you're right, Drew. I mean, we've never really seen a goal scoring drought like that for Blake Wheeler, even though he's more of a 20 to 25 goal scorer. He's not a 35 to 40 goal
scorer.
You expect him to score once every, let's say, you know, three or four games.
It just, you know, yeah, exactly. And I thought the fact that nobody talked about it really, you know, tells you how good this team has been going mm-hmm. and how good that top line for the Jets were last night.
Yeah.
You know, they're certainly back to full strength. I mean, Shifley with three assists last night, Blake Wheeler with two goals and an assist, and Kyle Connor getting the goal as well. So, you know, combined, those three players get 7 points last night. You can see that after, you know, to no surprise, it maybe took Mark Shifley one game, two games to get his skating legs back and to get back in the feel of things, but they were dominant last night. They were the prototypical top line that you'd want to see in an NHL game.
And Drew, last week we were talking about, with Shifley back, what were the line combinations going to be, and it was Perreault, Shifley, Wheeler, mm-hmm. after they had Line A, Shifley, and Wheeler. But guys, do you see Paul Maurice changing Connor, Shifley, and Wheeler? I mean, that has been the best first line combination for him all year, and as far as I'm concerned, I think you keep rolling with those three.
Yeah, and it's hard not to. I mean, that line plays with speed. They control the puck. I mean, what more can you really ask for from a line? And so, from my perspective, you know, you can see how much Shifley and Wheeler like having Kyle Connor on their line. I mean, he's got he's got an excellent shot, and again, he does something that they need, which is to play with speed. So
his puck retrieval, he does a great job.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better.
Doing a bit of that dirty work, and he's not, you know, a power forward, but he does a good job. He gets in, gets those pucks first, and I think he really complements Shifley and Wheeler. So I just don't see Maurice taking Connor off of that line.
If it's going well right now.
For now. Knows what's going to happen 2 weeks from now. But
if it ain't broke right now for the Jets, and it certainly isn't, there's no reason to try and fix it. When we come back, we'll discuss Line A and Ehlers and their new line mate, Andrew Kopp. We touched on it briefly. Talk about their month of February, how the Jets get those two players going. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
The rebound for Kyle Connor. Good retrieval. Back for Line A. Tees it up. Scores! Patrick Line A. It's a power play goal. The Jets are to within one as Line A gets his 14th power play goal of the year and his 25th marker of the campaign.
Patrick Laine had a good night for the Winnipeg Jets last night. The power play bomb from the point, as he said, before they could even finish announcing the penalty on the Avalanche, Laine had it deposited back behind Jonathan Bernier, giving the Jets, I believe that was their fourth goal of the game, if I'm not mistaken.
Here's a question for you, Drew.
Yes.
At 19 years old, is Patrick Laine already the most dangerous power play goal scorer of all time? And I'm not even joking.
I wouldn't say all time. I think that's a pretty bold statement. I would suggest
look what he's doing at 19.
I know.
Wait till he's 22, 23.
And it's only going to increase. And then maybe we can have that conversation when he's 22 or 23, assuming that it continues to grow exponentially. But what he's doing power play right now is, I mean, he's certainly, you can make an argument for Ovi as well, but right now I would suggest Laine is more dangerous on the power play than Ovechkin is. Just, I mean, every team tries to take his shot away from him, and when they're a half a second too slow or there's a clean face-off win like there was last night, before you can blink, it's behind the goaltender and the Jets are on the scoreboard.
I'm actually surprised that he doesn't have more power play goals.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, they just, because every team is playing against it. They're just trying to take it away.
You could see in the first period that the Avs were trying to play against it and trying to prevent the cross-ice pass to Laine, but of course in the second period.
It's like LeBron James. I mean, you can't stop him. You can only contain him.
That's a good basketball analogy, yes. Patrick Laine had some interesting comments prior to the game yesterday, sort of talking about his performance. Him and Ehlers have both sort of struggled in the month of February. Entering last night's game, they each only had 2 points, 2 goals each in 6 games in the month of February. Both of them were a minus, if you still subscribe to the plus-minus statistic. Here's what Patrick Laine had to say about his game so far.
Not very good. But it was like last game. It was a tough game, but it was huge for win for the team. So it doesn't matter. But obviously, everybody wants to play well, and I just need to get better.
When you watch a video of yourself, what do you see?
I don't usually watch videos of myself, but today I saw just a couple goals that I was on the ice against. I just think that I just need to be a little bit quicker and just stay with my guy and try not to make so many mistakes.
How worried are you about it?
I don't know. I'm not worried. I just need to get better, and I just try to work hard every day to try to get better, and that's it.
Who do you go to, or where do you go for advice?
I usually call my agent. He knows a bit about hockey, and he watches my every single game, so he can give me some advices, and that's pretty much it.
Patrick Laine talking about sort of the state of his game. Every time he does that, of course, he ends up scoring the next game, which is inevitably what's going to happen. You know, he played alongside Nikolaj Ehlers, that's no surprise, with Andrew Kopp up the middle between them. Now, that's, you know, to some extent a function of Adam Lowry being out of the Jets lineup and Jack Roslovic and, you know, having played so well a couple games ago, particularly the game against the Capitals. You know, what are your thoughts on Laine's game? Is he just sort of a 19-year-old guy who's going to go through some peaks and valleys alongside Nikolaj Ehlers, who sort of was in a valley as well? And did you like sort of Andrew Kopp's inclusion on their line just because of how simple a game Andrew Kopp tends to play as well?
Yeah, and, you know, Patrick Laine, I mean, you know, he's talking about, you know, going to his agent there. And, I mean, if he's going to keep scoring goals on the power play, then he should talk to his agent before every game, right? So, I mean, let's be honest here, guys. I mean, Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers are still trying to improve their even strength game. And Laine specifically, I think Ehlers has been a driver at 5-on-5. We talked to Murat about it last Saturday. I mean, Ehlers is the Jets' best possession player. He's the fastest guy on the team, even though Brendan Lemieux might have something to say about that. But in all honesty, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, Laine is doing most of his damage on the power play. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't have many problems with that. I mean, you know, you look at Laine, and he was on the top line with Scheifele and Wheeler, and it wasn't working out, so he was bumped down. And, you know, now Laine and Ehlers are out there with Kopp. As you mentioned, though, Drew, that's temporary. That's short-term. And we expect Ehlers and Laine to either both be together on that second line. I think the most effective line has been Little between Laine and Ehlers. And I realize, again, there are a lot of fans out there that want to see that super line of Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler. And don't get me wrong, Laine and Scheifele have been great together 5-on-5. But for some reason, and I can't necessarily pinpoint one thing, Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler has not worked 5-on-5, Dave. So as far as I'm concerned, you got to keep the pair of Laine and Ehlers together on the wings. Mm-hmm. And Little, for me, is the most logical centerman to play between those two players. But for me, the overall game, you know, watching Laine here on these eight games, for this eight-game homestand, I should say, I mean, yeah, at times, you know, Laine isn't creating enough at even strength. But he's scoring a power play goal almost every night or every second night. And so, you know, I think at times, you know, he might try to do too much. He might try to, you know, make a few too many moves at the blue line, that type of thing. But, I mean, he is 19 years old, and he still is learning the NHL game. And I think he is listening to his teammates, and he's trying to get better. But right now, I mean, he's producing. So if he's producing on the power play, I mean, doesn't that kind of make up for maybe his lack of productivity at even strength?
It's certainly a better situation than if he wasn't producing even strength or on the power play. Dave, let me ask you this. I mean, you have, you know, wingers now in let's say, Connor and Wheeler. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say they're a tandem. You know, they have been for a lot of the year. And you have Perreault and Roslovic right now playing with Brian Little.
Sure.
And you have Laine and Ehlers who've played together for a lot of the year. Mm-hmm. You don't have that sort of what I'll describe as a super skilled third centerman. You have Brian Little and Scheifele up the middle, and those guys are offensively inclined, defensively responsible, but definitely have the offensive side of the game too. Do the Jets need that third skilled center to go with that third skilled pairing on the wings that they seem to have?
I mean, it's yes. I mean, most teams would say yes, but I mean, the reality is, how are you going to get that? Are you going to have to give up some assets to get it? And the reality is, as we've seen, look, I mean, I think Adam Lowry ideally would be your fourth line center, you know, with a kind of a, in a shutdown role with other shutdown players.
Kopp and Armia.
Can you imagine, or Tanev or whatever? But the fact is, that's quite a fourth line if you can have that. And if you have the depth, then you're right, Drew. But I mean, you know, again, we've already talked about the depth of this Jets team, but there's only so much depth the team can have. I mean, where are you going to get that center from, right? You're going to have to go out and acquire it. And I'm not, like, I just don't see the Jets making any big moves. I could be wrong, but I don't see them making a big move to do that. Because I think they like what they have. I think they would be happy with Hendricks in the 4C and Lowry in the 3C.
And Dave, I see what your point is, Drew. Right. You're not just saying they have to make a move. You're saying with what they have, could they possibly use someone more skilled at third line center? And my answer to that would be Paul Maurice loved that Lowry, Tanev, Kopp line as a shutdown line.
Sure.
Right? So if he is going to continue to use that line as a shutdown line, then maybe you don't need a skilled third line center there because you get so much offense from your top two lines. Let's be honest, when Lowry was in the lineup and the Jets were scoring basically more than anybody with the exception of the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, it wasn't necessarily a problem. But now you've got Lowry, Tanev, some other guys out of the lineup, and you know, you're having some issues with your lines. But I mean, you look at last night, they didn't have that many issues. They popped in six goals, right? So I see your point, though.
Well,
I mean,
because I think with what you've seen, I think for a lot of the season is that despite how, you know, the decent numbers that Laine and Ehlers are putting up, because they're both putting up decent numbers because they're skilled players,
right?
And skilled players at that level almost by default put up decent numbers. It seems like they haven't been able to find that centerman that they really mesh well with.
And that's why I think the centerman they've meshed the most well with is Little.
Well, they've played the most with Brian Little. I mean, they, you know, for the really up until the Scheifele injury, that was who they were usually playing with. That was
right.
The sort of the second line there was, you know, Laine between Laine and Ehlers. And it just seems like they haven't been able to find that third guy that they really click with. And if they ever find that third guy, and I don't know who it is, and I don't know how easy it is to find and everything else, so I don't have an answer, I think the sky's the limit. So as well as they've been playing, which is they've been playing decent hockey for two very young players, if they are able to find that centerman who really completes that trio, watch out when that happens.
Well, and that could be Mark Scheifele, but the problem is Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are so good together.
Sure.
So I don't see Maurice breaking up Scheifele and Wheeler, but that's that argument that we've had for so long. So, you know, if you ask me, I think it's just a matter of time before Ehlers and Laine go back up to that second line and you see them with Brian Little.
Well, it is interesting to note yesterday that the line of Little, Perreault, and Roslovic. They only combined for one shot on goal in the course of the game yesterday.
Yeah, but you know what?
I don't think they're going to change anything because you won 6-1.
But the game before that, they were really good.
Right.
So I don't necessarily think that has been a bad line. And,
no,
you know,
no,
Roslovic,
I'm not saying it has been a bad line.
He deserves to be on the second line. But, again, I think once the Jets get healthier, you know, you expect Roslovic to most likely be on the third or fourth line. But, I mean, you know, Maurice is not afraid to juggle up these lines when he doesn't see something that he likes and when he sees something that he does like. But nothing is set in stone at this point.
No, and the one thing that's probably good is that these guys are able to be reflective of their games. And because they are putting up points, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily happy with where their game's at. And Paul Maurice talked about it yesterday, I believe, when he talked about when European players come over to North America, they tend to have a little bit of loop in their game because of the way they are used to the center ice, the ice in Europe. And if you straight skate at these guys, the reality is by the time you get to that defenseman, he's already gotten the puck out of the zone, and you've already lost the battle. So the fact is, they have a tendency to have a loop. So that's one thing he said, that with a guy like Patrick Laine, you have to kind of weed out of their game. And so I think it's part of the process. It's just learning to play
straight line hockey
mm-hmm. in a more of a North American game. And again, I think, look, he's adjusted well in terms of being able to put up points, but it's just in terms of his defensive game. So I think slowly but surely, as he gets rid of that other, you know, the element to his game and he develops it better, he'll start to have more success 5-on-5.
Again, these are good problems to have when you win 6-1 last night against the Colorado Avalanche. The preceding segment was brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we come back, Mike Kelly of NHL Network and TSN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN and the NHL Network, we're pleased to be joined on the line by Mike Kelly. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. How are you?
Doing very well, Mike. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
That's terrific.
People kind of call it the dog days of the hockey season sometimes, but I like this part of the season. You're starting to see some teams kind of jumping in and out on a nightly basis of playoff spots, and there's a lot in the line right now too, so it's fun.
Especially 9 days away from the NHL trade deadline,
which is
of course coming up next Monday, not this Monday, but the 26th of February. Mike, we'll start with the NHL trade deadline. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Jets with you, and we're going to talk about the NHL with you. From your perspective, a guy who not here in Winnipeg, so you probably don't watch the Jets necessarily night in, night out, but from your perspective, do the Jets need to be a buyer at this deadline, or can they stand pat given the roster that they've assembled and the success that they've had with that roster this season?
Well, if I'm the Winnipeg Jets, I'd be pretty happy with the roster that they have in place. I think anytime you're in these types of situations, if you can add to your roster for a playoff run and you know, maybe bolster an area that you think you might be a little deficient in, while not giving up anything that you're not comfortable giving up, then you do it, and that's fine. I don't think there's any need to, you know, start giving away high draft picks and top prospects to make a run here, because I think if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you really have to like the depth in your team. I mean, you look at the top line, obviously, is elite. Matthew Perreault playing kind of in a top six role now at times is showing, and I don't think he's surprising a lot of people that he can do that. Even when he was in a bottom six role this season, he was still producing. And then, you know, that affords you the ability to have, you know, Line A down in the lineup if he struggles a little bit. And the defense, you know, I imagine playing that defense in a playoff series, and there's a lot to like there. So I don't think they should rush or panic to do anything, because, they've got a pretty good lineup as it is.
You know, Mike, for someone who keeps a close eye on the stats, and you do a great job on Stats Center, and we want to ask you about the piece that you did on Taylor Hall. When you consider that Blake Wheeler didn't really miss a beat when he moved from right wing to center, are you surprised that he was able to be just as effective switching positions, and not only switching positions, but switching to arguably one of the hardest positions on the ice?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised. I mean, I've got a ton of respect for Blake Wheeler as a hockey player, and you know, we've seen him kind of flirting with the top 10 in points in years past. He's an elite hockey player, and I would say a superstar. And I don't know if he really gets, you know, that superstar kind of attention around the league. I think, you know, everybody knows he's a really good player, but I think he's a legitimate superstar. And when he made that switch over, you know, his chemistry with Mark Scheifele is so incredible. When he lost Scheifele, you know, there was no doubt in my mind he was still going to produce and be effective, but given how well he played down the middle when Scheifele was out of the lineup, and how well, that was a big reason, obviously, why Winnipeg had such a good record without Scheifele. I don't think you can underestimate how important he's been to the success of the team this year. And now that Scheifele's back, the chemistry those two guys have, it's not even about saying, well, they're the best duo in the league or they're not, but they might have the best chemistry of two forwards in the NHL. And I just look at, you know, you mentioned the statistics I look at, et cetera. I look at Scheifele and Wheeler, and they're both, you know, before Scheifele got injured, they're both in the top 10 in terms of passing pucks to the slot and receiving them in the slot. And that's Wheeler finding Scheifele. And that takes a couple of things. That takes vision and execution from Wheeler, first of all, to be able to complete passes in these really high contested areas. And then for Scheifele, the ability to get open in those areas, which is difficult. He talked about it, Andrew Kopp scoring that goal off a nice pass from Scheifele last night. And he talked about, you know, it's kind of overlooked sometimes how difficult it can be for a shooter to get open in those situations. People like to talk about the passing. But Scheifele's really good at getting open in the middle of the ice as well. So, you know, having those two together again, it makes the Winnipeg Jets legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, I think.
You know, Mike, when a player has 26 goals, it's hard to say there's any concern in his game, but there's been a little bit of concern with Patrick Laine's 5-on-5 game. What have you been able to assess of his season so far?
Yeah, well, he's got just, I think, the 9 5-on-5 goals. And, you know, I don't think you want to become, as a player, too comfortable being a specialist-type player where, you know, if he goes out in the power play, Patrick Laine knows that he can go out in the power play and score goals. He's got a terrific shot, obviously. But you'd like to see him contributing a little more 5-on-5, obviously. And if, you know, I thought there'd be more of an opportunity for him to do that in playing with Blake Wheeler for a little bit. And, you know, I'd have to look a lot closer, honestly, to try to see exactly why Patrick Laine isn't scoring 5-on-5. But, you know, obviously one thing that I did notice is that he's not creating as much offense in that role. But that's, you know, you can look at it as another kind of positive for the Jets as well, as if, you know, what happens if he does start scoring at 5-on-5? You know, how much better will this team be if that starts to happen for him? And he's a guy that can kind of catch lightning in a bottle as well. So, you know, good problems to have, really, if you're the Winnipeg Jets in that, oh, you know, we hope that Patrick Laine can score a little bit more at 5-on-5.
Mike Kelly is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike is with the NHL Network and TSN. Mike, shifting away from the Winnipeg Jets, the Pittsburgh Penguins currently have the top power play in the NHL, little over 26.5%. They're second in the Metropolitan Division. They're 8-1-1 in the last 10 games. Make me an argument for why the Pittsburgh Penguins won't represent the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay, they give up too much defensively. That would be my argument. You know, the Penguins have a ton of firepower, and the power play has been incredibly good. And it's not just, you know, there was an interesting contrast I looked at a little earlier this season, a couple weeks ago. Just obviously the talent level that the Penguins have, and you look at the power play and say, well, of course they're going to score a lot of goals. But the Blackhawks have a ton of power play talent as well, and they can't score. Pittsburgh does a really good job, you know, situating players in positions to succeed on that power play, and they all bring something unique to the table. But I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins defensively, and there are issues there that can be exploited. They score a ton. You can even get into things like expected goals, and they're number one in the league. But when it comes to, you know, limiting offense, you know, they give up the third most shots from an area called the inner slot, an area right in front of the crease where about half the goals are scored in the league. They give up a ton of shots from there. They give up the most odd man rushes of any team in the league. They have trouble defending against the rush as well. They give up a ton of scoring chances off the rush. So if I had to give you a reason why the Pittsburgh Penguins will not represent the Eastern Conference, defensive deficiencies.
Mike, earlier I mentioned the piece that you did earlier this week on Taylor Hall and your case for Taylor Hall to win the Hart Trophy, or at the very least be a nominee for the Hart Trophy. And if anybody hasn't already checked it out, you should go to tsn.ca. We'll tweet it out after the interview. And Mike, I should mention that of the three of us, I am a Devils fan, so I particularly like this piece. But, you know, you break down, you know, Taylor Hall's controlled zone entries and his zone exits, and, you know, it's tough to argue with the numbers. He's over a point a game right now. Do you think enough people are talking about how great of a season Taylor Hall is having for the Devils this year?
I've started to kind of see it in the last maybe half a week or so. The talk pick up a little bit, which is good. Maybe the last week or so, which is good for him. You know, 60 points in 52 games, and I think it's tough. He sits 17th in the league right now in scoring. It would probably be tough to convince people to give the MVP to an offensive player who's 17th in the league in scoring, but there's kind of two ways to look at it, right? There's the, do you give it to the best player in the league, or do you give it to how the trophy's actually defined, the player deemed most valuable to his team? And if you go the second route, then I think you really start to have a case for Taylor Hall, because, you know, you talk about the zone entries and exits, and, you know, he transitions the puck incredibly well. One of the top forwards in the league in bringing the puck through the neutral zone with speed. He attacks the net, generates a lot of shots from the middle of the ice, and he's got what I believe now is a 16-game point streak. He scored a point in every game since the calendar flipped to 2018. And those are all good things, but when you look at why I think he should be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy, and you get back to that definition of the trophy, which is the player deemed most valuable to his team, the New Jersey Devils are in a playoff spot right now. Nobody thought they would be. And when I did the story for TSN on Wednesday, at the time, he had 25 more points than the second highest scoring guy on his team, which is Nico Hischier. That was the biggest gap on any team in the league. I think Kopitar had 21 more than the next highest guy on LA, but Taylor Hall, 25 more points than the next highest scoring guy on his team. And he has the New Jersey Devils, who were a lottery team last year in a playoff spot. Those are reasons enough for me to give this guy some consideration for the Hart Trophy right now.
Now, Mike, folks around here watch the Central Division and how good it is every single night in and night out. But one team that's having some real struggles are those Chicago Blackhawks, the perennial leaders usually of the Central. What have you noticed that's really been ailing the Chicago Blackhawks this season?
Yeah, it's you know, not to pick favorites or anything. It's not like I grew up in Chicago, but it's too bad to see. The Hawks are a terrific franchise, original six team. Obviously, the madhouse on Madison, when it gets going, is a ton of fun to watch. They've got a lot of star power. You know, I talked about it earlier this season, I think around November on the NHL Network, that they were one of the worst defensive teams in the NHL, in my opinion, in terms of what they give up. And they were getting great goaltending from Corey Crawford, so they were hanging around in a playoff spot, and all was good. But sure enough, Corey Crawford goes down with an injury. The goaltending goes from top 10 to bottom 10, and now you got a team that's 12 points out of a playoff spot. They're not going to make the playoffs at this point. The two things that stick out really to me the most are five-on-five defensively, how poor they are. I mentioned Pittsburgh allowing the most odd-man rushes of any team in the league. Chicago's second worst. And in their own end, you know, high turnover rates. They allow a lot of passes into the middle of the ice, a lot of shots in the middle of the ice, make it really hard on themselves. The power play as well, for all the talent that they have, is letting them down this season. You know, and I broke that down maybe a month or so ago, and just simple things like, you know, they don't hit the net. They really struggle getting pucks into the middle of the ice. They struggle on their entries. You know, if it's not Patrick Kane bringing the puck in, which he does a really good job. The rest of the team struggles in that area. So it's, you know, power play and their defensive game, I think, are what's costing them the most. And I think they really miss guys that were there last year who aren't there this year, guys like Marian Hossa and Marcus Kruger and Nick Hjalmarsson. I think it's made a big difference.
Mike Kelly covers the NHL for TSN and the NHL Network. Mike, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, anytime. And enjoy watching the Winnipeg Jets. Fun team. And be a great story, obviously, if they can make a bit of a run in the playoffs.
That it would be, Mike. We're all waiting for April at this point in time. It'll be fun. Thanks again.
Okay, take care.
When we come back, we discuss tomorrow night's game against the Florida Panthers. They make their lone visit to Bell MTS Place. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Protecting the puck, looking for help, he's got it. Huberdeau moving with Barkov. Huberdeau floats it in front, Barkov to the backhand. It stays out, Ekblad fires, he scores! Let's go home, baby! Game winner, Ekblad!
Aaron Ekblad scoring for the Florida Panthers. Their stud defenseman on the back end. He's got 12 goals and 11 assists for 23 points.
We were all there when he was drafted.
It's true.
Philly.
And Philly, the Philly draft. Exactly. You're absolutely right, Mr. Ginsburg. That was he's in town tomorrow night as part of his Florida Panthers, their lone visit here to Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I know Frank was fired up after that first segment.
Yes, he was sending us some tweets. He was tweeting at us during the game last night as well. He was, had a little chatter going back and forth with Mr. Zappia there about some of the game action. The Panthers visiting the Jets tomorrow night. It's a 7 o'clock puck drop at Bell MTS Place. It's going to be a tough one for the Panthers. A lot of travel. They played a night in Edmonton, if I'm not mistaken. It's either Edmonton or Calgary.
Calgary.
But they played a night in Calgary and then have the quick turnaround 22 hours later. So they won't get into Winnipeg. Well, that game starts at 8 o'clock Mountain Time. Best case scenario, they're probably in Winnipeg by about 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., something like that, as they lose an hour on top of everything. So it's going to be a tough turnaround for the Florida Panthers as they're up against the Jets tomorrow night, a Jets team that'll be ready and rested waiting for them. You know, Panthers are certainly out of a playoff spot, but what's interesting or what might give them some hope is that they're 8 points behind the New York Islanders for the second wild card spot, and they have three teams between them and the Islanders. But they have six games in hand on the New York Islanders. They played the fewest number of games in the entire NHL, having played only 54 games right now.
Speaking of the Islanders, did you see how many saves Greiss made yesterday?
I didn't. How many?
I think it was 46.
That's a good victory for the Islanders. 3-0 over Carolina propelled them back into a playoff spot, leapfrogging the Hurricanes.
And Halak made like 50 the night before.
Something like
3-0 win over the Rangers.
Well, the Islanders give up so many shots. You know, talking to Mike Kelly last segment about how many shots the Penguins give up, Drew. I mean, the Islanders.
I don't think anyone has expectations. The Islanders are, if they make the playoffs, they're not going far in the playoffs.
Well, they how many games this year have they won 5-4, 4-3? I mean, they just give up too much defensively.
They absolutely do. But the Panthers, who are the subject matter of this segment because they're in town tomorrow night, the Panthers have to be saying to themselves, look, we're, you know, out of a playoff spot right now, but our ace in the hole is that we have so many games in hand, and maybe kind of shoulda, if we go on a bit of a run, we can get back into the playoff conversation. I don't expect it's going to happen. They're too deficient on the back end. They've given up 175 goals this season, but you're getting Luongo back. He just got activated off IR. Not sure if he'll... I suspect he'll play tonight in Calgary, and Reimer will play tomorrow night here in Winnipeg, given that he's a Manitoban and all.
Yeah, we got Matthew DeFranks coming up next segment. He covers the Panthers for the Sun Sentinel, and he reported yesterday that Roberto Luongo will play tonight versus Calgary, so that probably means that he won't play, as you mentioned, on Sunday versus the Jets. But, you know, Luongo hasn't played since early December, Drew.
He's been out of the lineup for so long.
It's been James Reimer as of late, and then, you know, Harry Sateri's played a little bit for the Panthers. He's from Finland. Finland, of course. We were talking about him when it was mentioned that the Jets and Panthers will be playing in Finland. So you got Barkov and Sateri from Finland. So, you know, it's a big boost for the Panthers. But as you mentioned, I mean, they're still in it right now. And even though, you know, they're on the outside looking in, I mean, they're still battling, and they've been playing some good hockey as of late. And you mentioned the defense. I mean, this is a young group of defensemen. When I watch the Panthers, a guy that I really like, and, you know, the Panthers were criticized a little bit for signing him to a long-term contract, is Mike Matheson.
Sure.
I really like his game, and I've always liked Alex Petrovic's game. And you mentioned Aaron Ekblad, the first overall pick back in 2014. I mean, this is a future Norris Trophy winner, in my opinion. It's just a matter of time, and... You know, it's been a bit of a difficult season for Dale Tallon and the Panthers, but, you know, they have a great opportunity here to make a late run, as you mentioned. They've got the games in hand on the Islanders, so I wouldn't count them out completely.
Very top-heavy team in terms of their offensive production. They're led by Jonathan Huberdeau, Vincent Trocheck, and Alexander Barkov. Each of them have 50 points, or Huberdeau 53, Trocheck 51, and Barkov 50. After that, there's a drop-off next to Evgeny Dadonov, who came over from the KHL this offseason. So you sort of know what the Jets have to do is they have to shut down that, you know, the Huberdeau, Trocheck, Barkov line, even though they're not a line. Those are the guys you have to shut down, and those are the guys you have to focus on. You know, that last game the Jets and the Panthers played, that was back in December. Remember, Eric Comrie got the start. It was not the way the Jets want to play, so you know that they probably have a little bit of a sour taste in their mind going back to that game. Jets, this is a... It's almost a scheduled loss for the Panthers, given the travel and everything else. The Jets need to just jump on them and take advantage
of it. I mean, I wouldn't say that, Drew, because, you know, we saw what St. Louis did to Winnipeg. That was the second game of a back-to-back.
Right, but this is worse travel than that St. Louis one.
No, you're right. I mean, it's not an ideal situation for the Panthers, but I don't think, you know, we should say that, you know, this is a scheduled loss. I agree. I mean, I would pick the Jets to beat the Panthers. I think the Jets are a better team. Mm-hmm. But the Panthers have some pride here, and they're playing some pretty good hockey. And for me, it'll be interesting to see who starts in goal. And don't get me wrong. I think, you know, the money is on Connor Hellebuck.
Oh, for the Jets, you mean?
Yes. Sure. And, you know, they were talking about it on the postgame show, Kevin O and Josh Green. And I don't think it's out of the question that Eric Comrie gets the start, because when you consider that, you know, the Jets have those two games back-to-back next weekend against, what is it, Dallas-St. Louis?
St. Louis on next Friday night, Dallas next Saturday. Just a quick programming note about next Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 12:30 p.m. start time for next Saturday, because we have the gold medal game of the Men's Olympic Hockey Tournament during our usual time slot. So 12:30 next Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
So I actually get to sleep in for once.
Sure, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think the one thing the Jets have to do, though, is take advantage. I mean, you can't ever say that a game is an automatic win. I mean, yes, you should beat the team because they're coming in, but this is the NHL, and you can't take anything for granted. Like you saw with that St. Louis team. Now, that St. Louis team is better than this Florida team, but the reality is still the reality, and they have some very talented players that if they get one or two early goals on you, can maybe hold on to that lead. But the fact of the matter is the Jets from... this for the remainder of the schedule, which is two more games on this 10-game homestand, they get the benefit of having teams who have played the previous night. So you'll have had Florida who have played in Calgary tonight, and then come to Winnipeg, and you've got LA having played in Chicago
on Monday night,
and then come here to Winnipeg on for a game Tuesday.
And Dave, you know, Drew mentioned earlier, up the middle, I mean, 1-2 Alexander Barkov, Vincent Trocheck. I mean, I think Trocheck doesn't get talked about enough for how good of a player he is. I mean, I would take him on my team any day of the week. So right up the middle, they're really strong. And Jared McCann, I mean, he's still a young forward, but, you know, they're only going to get better. And, you know, this Panthers team, even though, you know, they've had their struggles both offensively and defensively, there's a lot of skill throughout this lineup, and they play hard.
Yeah, they just signed Colton Sevior to a 3-year contract extension. He's sort of playing a depth role for him, but he gets 3 years at $1.2 million per season for the next 3 years.
Good player.
So they obviously like what he brings to the table. He's just one of those sort of depth guys that every team needs to go out and do a lot of the dirty work. He's got 14 points in 46 games. To Ezzie's point, though, Dave, could you see Comrie maybe tomorrow and or Tuesday against the Kings to allow, and my thinking behind that, because it's not like this is a difficult part of the schedule.
No.
My thinking behind that would be, if you give Hellebuck a few days off, perhaps you can go to him back-to-back Friday,
yes,
Saturday,
yes,
in those two Central Division matchups.
Yeah, and we've seen Connor Hellebuck taking more maintenance days, which is a little unusual for a goalie, but definitely been happening, where he's been taking off the some of the practices and whatnot. So he's been getting his rest, which is obviously important because there has been a heavy load on him, heavy expectations. I could see Eric Comrie getting the start, but, you know, Connor Hellebuck, I mean, Coach Maurice, yeah, started Artur Zerbe 72 games 1 year and 75 games another year when he was the coach in Carolina. So I don't know that he's ever going to see a goalie. And the reality is, if you talk to Connor Hellebuck, he's going to want to make every start. I mean, and the truth is, there is enough separation in between these games that it's not like he's playing back-to-back-to-back. Sure. Back. So if you're going to give Eric Comrie a start, I would suspect it would be against the Florida Panthers. Give Eric Comrie a chance for a little redemption against those Panthers. And, you know, for fans who are curious, Eric Comrie really, to me, has regained his form. I mean, we didn't see him because he was on the road with the Moose when they were on that 9-game road trip, but Eric Comrie was back to that Eric Comrie that we're kind of used to seeing after his injury and after the call-up with the Jets. So Eric Comrie is really back to being a confident, strong goaltender. So, I mean, if you're going to give him a chance, I think tomorrow's game is probably it.
By the way, if you're going to bring up Artur Zerbe, we have to bring up the white Jofa Cage helmet.
Of course.
I mean, that was the best helmet of all time.
And Artur Zerbe was just a classic.
Yeah, great goalie.
When we come back, Matthew DeFranks is going to join us for more on the Panthers. He covers the team for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio here on Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the South Florida Sun Sentinel, he covers the Florida Panthers. We're pleased to welcome to the program Matthew DeFranks. Matthew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing very well, Matthew. How about yourself?
I'm fine. All right.
That's good. Obviously, Matthew brought you on to talk about the Panthers. They're making their sole visit to Winnipeg tomorrow evening. And, you know, we were looking at the Panthers earlier, and, you know, they're certainly out of a playoff spot right now as things stand in the Eastern Conference. But inside the dressing room, are they looking at the fact that they have 6 games in hand on the New York Islanders and, you know, 4 games and 5 games in hand on some of the other teams they're chasing and saying, look, even though we're behind them, we have an opportunity here if we go on a run and we use these games in hand to put ourselves back into a playoff conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely part of the mentality they have. Just if you look at the points percentage of the teams in front of them, I mean, they're not that great. I think the Islanders on pace for 87 points, I want to say. And 87 points getting into the playoffs is not an insurmountable number. I think the Panthers are on pace for 85 right now. So if they do use those games in hand and even just play the way they have been playing, pick up a few extra wins, they'll be right in that picture. So, you know, right now the playoff picture doesn't look that great because of the points, but you look at the pace the teams are going and the pace the Panthers are going, and they're in the mix somehow. And I think this next stretch will tell us a lot about if they're contenders or if they're pretenders. I mean, they've been playing well recently. They've won since the last 7. But none of those 7 games were against teams that are currently in the playoffs. Their next 7 games starting, you know, tonight in Calgary, tomorrow in Winnipeg, are all against current playoff teams. So whether they can get through this stretch still in the mix in kind of a wide open Eastern Conference, will tell us, you know, how they move forward with the rest of the season, how their mentality changes in terms of, maybe making the postseason.
Matthew, yesterday you tweeted out that Bob Bugner announced that Roberto Luongo is going to start tonight versus the Calgary Flames. It's going to be his first start since early December, which would probably mean that James Reimer is going to play versus the Jets in his home province. What's the plan for the rest of the season for Bob Bugner? Is it to split time between Roberto Luongo and James Reimer, or do you see maybe James Reimer getting the majority of the starts for the rest of the year?
I think it's going to be whoever's hot. I think you know, the Panthers kind of made that determination, you know, maybe a month or two ago that they weren't in any position to kind of split playing time. They were just going to go with whoever was playing the best. I mean, when Luongo got hurt on December 4, I think James Reimer made 18 straight starts, something like that, where Jari Satteri got in the net. And then when Satteri got in the net, he was playing well. They started him for 6 straight games. Reimer came back, but because he was a hot goalie. So I think he kind of is playing better, and they're just going to ride him. They've done that at various points of the season. When Luongo came back from a hand injury, he was playing really well, and James Reimer didn't see much of the ice other than back-to-backs. So I think at this point in the season, where they are in the standings, where they want to be, it's going to be riding the hot hands. And, you know, whether that's Reimer or Luongo, not quite sure. But it's 2 games back since he would Ryan James Reimer.
Matthew, let me interrupt you for 1 second. Yeah. The phone line is cutting out a little bit, so we're going to try and call you back and maybe get a better connection. So hang tight. Our producer is going to call you right back and see if we can hear you a little bit clearer after the sketchy phone connection.
Hey, it's live radio. It happens,
it
right?
It happens. You never know what's going to happen.
It's so not our fault. I mean, Matthew was under the sea.
I don't get it.
Boy, underwater. If you're underwater, then it's hard to get a reception.
Why would he be under the sea, though?
Never mind.
It was a joke.
Yeah,
it was a terrible joke.
Not really. Ezzy laughed.
I thought it was good.
Ezzy laughs at all our jokes. He's nice that way.
He doesn't laugh at your jokes.
Well, sometimes he does.
That's true. I don't laugh at much of your jokes.
Sometimes you just laugh at me. Anyways, we're going to try and get Matthew back on the line, see if we can get a better connection there. As he was in the midst of his answer about, you know, Roberto Luongo there and James Reimer. I think we got Matthew back. Matthew, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back here.
Sorry about that.
There we go.
Now you're crystal clear,
Matthew.
Yeah. So you were saying about Luongo and sort of that Bob Bugner's going to ride the hot hand, you figure, from now through the end of the season, given that wins are at a premium?
Yeah, I think, and that's what they've done earlier this season, too. You know, when Luongo came back from his right-hand injury, he was playing really well, and James Reimer didn't play unless it was a back-to-back situation. And, you know, when Luongo got hurt this time, Reimer played a bunch, and then when Reimer got hurt, Satteri played, and he was really good in that. And even when Reimer came back, Satteri still played. So I think Bob Bugner has shown before that they're willing to ride the hot hand, and I don't think that changes in the last 2 months of the season.
Matthew, late last month, it was announced that the Jets and the Panthers are going to be playing in Finland next season, a couple of games in Finland next season. We know what the reaction is here in Winnipeg. What about in Florida? What was it like? What did the Panthers say about that and the fans themselves?
Yeah, I think they're excited, and I think you know, obviously the biggest person that has reason to be excited is Alexander Barkov. You know, I think a lot of this matchup is going to be Barkov and Laine, and for good reason. I mean, they're the two premier Finnish forwards right now, and you know, I think everyone welcomes the not so much the distraction, but that is different. You know, it's different. They get to go see the world. They get to go to Europe to play a game or 2 games and kind of welcome home Alexander Barkov. And it's not just Barkov on the Panthers that could be returning to Finland. They have a prospect who's currently playing in Denver named Henrik Borgström. He's supposed to be the next great thing down in Florida, and he's expected to be with the team next year. They have a couple more prospects in the AHL that are from Finland, and they have this guy named Henrik Hoppe, who led Liga in scoring last year. He had some injuries in the AHL this year and returned to his team in Finland for the rest of the season, but he intends to come back next year. So it's not just Barkov and Laine that may be going. The Panthers may have a couple more Finnish guys to go with them over there.
Matthew DeFranks is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Matthew covers the Florida Panthers for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Matthew, the Panthers locked up Colton Sevier with a 3-year contract extension earlier in the week. He was set to be a UFA at season's end. Why did Dale Tallon and the Panthers Brain Trust decide to put a priority on getting Sevier under contract for the next 3 seasons?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with Sevier wanting to do that. I'm not quite sure he wanted to go to free agency and deal with that uncertainty. So I think the deal benefits him as much as it does the team, a 3-year deal, a cheap enough deal, 1.2 AAV. So it's a decent, solid deal, and he's a modern fourth line player. He kills penalties. He's on their top PK unit. He can chip in scoring. It's not really what he's known for, but he is a pretty decent skater. He's a fast skater. He can forecheck well, and you know, he kind of fits that modern fourth line role where you want some speed guys to control penalties, and not necessarily the old school checking fourth line. I think it's a good happy medium where he wanted to stay. It was a decent price. I think he might have gotten, you know, a little bit more, value on the open market, but maybe not the term, maybe 2 years and a little bit more money. But, I think the stability it provides, you know, him as a person as well, I think is valuable to him. And, as a team, I'm not sure you could quite, kind of dock them for a 1.2 AAV for a guy that's really valuable in your penalty kill.
Matthew, we're 9 days away from the NHL trade deadline. Do you expect the Panthers to be active? You hear, you know, Radim Verbata might be available. He's a pending UFA. Do you think Dale Talon is going to make a few moves here, or do you think that he's going to be relatively quiet prior to the trade deadline?
Yeah, they're in kind of a weird position, like we talked about earlier with the playoffs. They're not quite out. They're not quite in. They're kind of in that middle, and it kind of compounds with their contract situations. I mean, Rabada is their only UFA. That's it. It's just him. He's their only expiring contract. They have Huberto, Trocheck, Barkov, Buchstad, Sevier, Ekblad, Yandel, Matheson, all those guys signed long-term. So you don't have a ton of flexibility in terms of contracts, and then you also are uncertain about your position in the standings. So, I would guess that they're going to try their hardest to trade Radim Verbata. I mean, he hasn't really been that productive for the Panthers. He's been a healthy scratch for 6 games. He said that this is going to be his last season in the NHL. He's going to retire after this. So you might as well try to get something out of him, maybe a late round pick or maybe just cash or something. So I can see that happening. But outside of that, I'm not quite sure what they do because they're in a tough spot, you know, both in the standings and with their contract situation. So I could see them being quiet, but I guess this next week and we'll determine where they are in the standings and how that they move forward with that.
You know, Matthew, how would you describe Aaron Ekblad's season so far?
Yeah, it's been a little different. I think you look at each of his years have kind of been an adjustment period. Right, so this is his fourth year in the league. He came in with 18. I think everyone knows about him with the top overall pick. And, that's just kind of adjusting to the NHL a little bit. And then the last 2 years, he's dealt with his head injuries, his concussions, from international play and in the NHL. He's missed some time. And this year, it's really, really been different because he's been asked to be a shutdown defenseman. He's on the top pair. He's playing, the top penalty kill unit. He's on the second power play unit. If you look at his zone starts, I think 55% are in the defensive zone. And prior to this year, I think he'd been around 40%. So that's a big jump for someone. And, it's tough to forget or it's tough to remember that he is only 22 years old. He turned 22, I think, a week or two ago. And, this is his fourth season in the league. And the offense has always been there. And it's been there a lot recently for him as well. I think he had 6 goals his last 13 games. And so the offense has come in. The defense is an adjustment because, it's tough to do. And I think that's also, when you look at Charlie McAvoy and what he's doing in Boston, he's doing that as a rookie, what Aaron Ekblad is being asked to do in his fourth year. So it's been kind of up and down for Ekblad and kind of figuring out what his role is. But the offense has always been there. It's now just the defense and the overall package sort of coming together.
Matthew, we'll let you go on this last question. And unfortunately, it's on a down note, given what happened Wednesday at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. That's not far from the Panthers' home base in Sunrise. The team was on the road in Vancouver, of course, on Wednesday when the tragedy unfolded. A tragedy. Words sort of fail me, but what were the reverberations of the incident like in the Panthers dressing room? I'm sure that they have friends and colleagues who are nearby or just it being so close to all their families there in South Florida.
Yes. Yeah, so Derek McKenzie, the captain, talked about this, a little bit, and, he actually lives in Parkland, as does Roberto Luongo and a couple other guys on the team. They live in that area, and how difficult it was to kind of be literally the farthest they could be away from from South Florida in Vancouver, and kind of have to deal with you know, what's going on back home, talking to their wives, making sure their kids are okay, making sure their neighbors are fine, and all that, you know, dealing with that. You know, it was obviously pretty tough to be that far and kind of have a helpless feeling. But, you know, I think the Panthers organization is going to help out in the future. They announced a blood drive for next Thursday, I believe, their first home game back after the road trip. They're going to, you know, have a blood drive for the Parkland area to kind of replenish the blood banks. And I believe they're going to be wearing decals and patches and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of coming together in the community. And, you know, I think the Panthers feel that as well, too.
Matthew DeFranks covers the Florida Panthers for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Matthew, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time and your insight into the Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get you a better connection next time.
That's all quite okay, Matthew. Don't worry about it. Thanks very much. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Those Team Canada jerseys looking very sharp.
Do you like the black ones?
Yeah, yep. I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like them.
Too bad about another shootout loss to the Jets.
Yeah, it's almost 20 years to the day.
I know, it's crazy, but anyways, it's, you know, the Russians beat up on the Americans earlier today as well.
What about Wojtek Wolski's goal in the shootout?
It's a great story.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah. I mean, coming back from a broken neck to lead Team Canada to the victory over Switzerland in their opening game. Now Team Canada is going to have to hope to defeat, I mean, they're going to defeat South Korea. Then they have to, I think, hope for Switzerland to defeat the Czech Republic for Team Canada to finish first in their pool. But whatever. Not, you know, not too worried about it.
Yeah, though. They look pretty good. I mean, we know the shootout is a coin flip. And,
yeah.
You know, Ben Scriven's doing a great job in goal for Canada, too.
Yeah. Anyways, it looks like it's Russia's tournament to lose again. They were dominant over the Americans earlier today. Interesting debate happening in the Jets organization or the Jets dressing room between, I'm not saying that there's controversy here, but, you know, Blake Wheeler started saying, tap the brakes, everybody, you know, slow down. We haven't even made the playoffs. We're talking Stanley Cup finalists or Stanley Cup contender. We haven't even made the playoffs. We haven't done anything. And then Paul Maurice had some real interesting comments earlier this week in one of his post-practice interviews and meetings, talking about the pressure that might be on this team. Here's what Paul Maurice had to say.
Blake Wheeler talked at the end of the last game about the pressure and expectation they feel in this town. And he went on about it for a while, and it's clearly gotten into the his head, if no one else's. How heavy is it?
Yeah, I don't think it's there at all. Like, I'm going to be honest. I only saw a piece of it. But what we talk about every day is, so let me go back. The piece that I got was, we haven't made the playoffs last year. We're just trying to make the playoffs. That piece I saw. Because that's, and we're not sitting in there going, hey, boys, we haven't made the playoffs. Let's, nobody take a deep breath. Like, we should just handle today. Don't worry about what people think of us or where we are in the standings or what we just handle today. And that's been something we talk about every day. You handle a game. If we're down after two periods of hockey, we talk, and even if it's a big score, it hasn't happened a lot. We want to make sure that we handle the third period right. What's right in front of us, we handle. So when we start talking about how good is this team, where is it in the standings, what could happen in 2 months down, we get into the playoffs, is it a legitimate contending team? That's really not part of, and specifically not part of what we want to talk about. We want to handle our day.
But he talked about hearing that, you know, wherever he goes, and
right,
and not being able to get away from it, basically. So how do you prevent that from becoming too heavy, that external expectation?
I don't care. I think I've always taken that idea that that's the kind of pressure that you want in your room. You work really hard to get that kind of pressure in your room, and it's a whole lot better than the other. You can't go anywhere because you get tomatoes thrown at you. So we just deal with it and deal with it. It is like high expectations are a great thing. You usually have to earn them. We don't have 5 years under our belt of being right there when the playoffs were over in the finals or in the final four. So we want to get to that. But the only way we're getting there is handled today.
So when you hear that this is weighing on your captain, what do you think?
It's working for him, isn't it? He's playing the best hockey I've ever seen him play in his life. He's dominant on the ice. So he can handle it.
I mean, credit to Paul Friesen for asking the questions, of course. He always gets good answers from players and or the coach. It's a really interesting sort of dichotomy between embracing the expectations, and that's sort of what Paul Maurice is saying, is that you guys have worked hard to get to this point, you know, embrace the expectations. It's better than being out of the playoffs and having tomatoes thrown at you, versus Blake Wheeler. What he's saying is, like, we haven't done anything. We haven't accomplished anything. And I wonder,
and they haven't.
Yeah, they're both right. Neither, there's not a wrong or a right here. It's just a real interesting perspective. Each of them is looking at it as, through a slightly different lens. And it's sort of, you know, a little insight into the minds of each of the individuals.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, I think, has done an excellent job over the last couple years as captain, taking over from Andrew Ladd. And let's be honest here, guys, they can't start looking ahead to early April, mid-April, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, because they're competing for a playoff spot right now. They're competing for the Central Division crown right now, and they're sure tied with the Nashville Predators, and yes, the Predators have two games in hand, but the point is the Jets are a top team in their division and in the conference right now, and they don't want to start letting the Stanley Cup playoffs be a distraction, because let's be honest here, that's a long time away.
You also have the Dallas Stars, who are only 5 points behind you now,
right,
and the St. Louis Blues, who are 5 points, who are tied with the Stars, so the rear view mirror is real close.
Right.
Never mind, and the playoffs are a long way off.
And Drew, I think what Blake Wheeler is doing here, or, you know, what he means when he's speaking to the media, is that he's trying to keep it in perspective for his team, right? And I think he does a great job. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he has put this team on his back this year. You know, Paul Maurice mentions it, you know, in his comments there. I mean, he is playing the best. This is the best we've ever seen Blake Wheeler play.
Mm-hmm.
And he is getting better in his early 30s. And he is a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate. I don't care what anybody says. I realize Nikita Kucherov's having a great year, and I realize Johnny Gaudreau's having a great year, but Blake Wheeler is a Hart Trophy candidate, if you ask me right now, if the season ended today. So I think he's trying to keep things in perspective, Dave, and he's trying to not let it get to the Jets' head, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Ez. I mean, I was in the scrum with Wheeler, and I didn't, like, I took it as, like, let's just, I didn't think he was saying you can't have any fun with this, but I think he was saying, like, look, we've lost two games at home, and sure, that's a bit of an anomaly for a team that really hadn't lost much at home.
They lost five at home all season
right,
long.
Right, and to lose two back-to-back is obviously an anomaly, so I think, but he was saying, like, let's not act like the world is falling. I mean, it's two games in a long season, and we can't have an expectation we're going to win every single game, but at the same time, I agree with Paul Maurice. I mean, you know, the fact that, and Blake Wheeler accepted that. He said it's a lot better to have the pressure of winning and fans in the building than the alternative, which is what they dealt with in Atlanta, which was, like, not a lot of fans.
Apathy.
And whether they, you know, and that you just don't have that external pressure the same way as you would have in a hockey crazy market like Winnipeg. So I really do understand it from all perspectives. He's sitting there saying, let's just focus on what we have to focus on, and like, the end of the day, they can't dwell too much on a win, and they can't dwell too much on a loss, because this is a team that hasn't done anything, right? I mean, it's very nice, like, you guys, like, they've achieved a lot of success to this point in the season, but as you guys just touched on a few minutes ago, the fact of the matter is there's teams that are in the rearview mirror. You have a few losses here and there, a couple teams go on runs. I'm not saying they're going to miss the playoffs, obviously, but I'm just saying that top spot in the Central can quickly elude you, so I think he's just trying to keep the focus on the here and now.
And all the Jets in the dressing room know that they're going to the playoffs. I mean, these guys know that, but they're not going to start talking about it in the dressing room too much, because they know that this is just step one.
Sure.
Step one is get into the playoffs. Step two is the first round, and then you go from there. But I don't think they want this to creep too much into their thought process at all, because I realize it's cliche, but these guys really do just focus on one game at a time. Like, these guys aren't focused on the team they're playing 2 weeks from now. Most hockey players are literally focused on what they have coming up in front of them. Today's a practice. Tomorrow's a game at night. I mean, and we know how they are creatures of habit. I really don't think that these guys are already talking about what they're going to do in the playoffs. I think they know whatever it is, 90%, 95%. I mean, the Jets are going to the playoffs. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, unless they lose 12 games in a row, which is not happening, especially with the way they're playing at home. These guys know it, so they don't want to start focusing on something that they can't control right now.
It makes sense. You know, for a team that really has no playoff experience to speak of, or minimal playoff experience to speak of, but Dustin Byfuglien has some with the Chicago Blackhawks, of course. And
Hendricks has some.
Yeah, it has some. But, I mean, the key members of this team, this is the first time really having expectations, being a top five team in the NHL. You know, it seems to me that thus far they're handling that extra pressure pretty well. Of course, it's a different pressure come April when every loss is got a magnitude attached to it because it's a best of seven series.
Yep.
But I think the dressing, you know, they talk about always being right when they play the game and you have to play the game right. It seems like Blake Wheeler is trying to keep the dressing room right in the lead up to throughout the rest of the season.
And that's what a good captain does, right? And I think for all of the criticism in year past of, you know, the Jets having a leadership void, I mean, I don't think anybody's talking about that now, are they?
You don't hear a lot about the Atlanta Five anymore or anything like that. Of course, Andrew Ladd no longer with the team anymore. But
right, and you've got Mark Scheifele, you know, who's an assistant captain now, and he leads by example. So I have no problem with the way Blake Wheeler is conducting himself.
One team that had Stanley Cup aspirations was the Columbus Blue Jackets. They lost last night. John Tortorella, not a happy camper. George Richards of the Columbus Dispatch joins us next to talk about the Blue Jackets and their struggles. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca. Yeah.